This is an interview with Mrs. Lena Grappo for Youngstown State University for the Oral History Department, The History of East Palestine by Stephen Cossey at 524
East Grant,
East Palestine, Ohio, on May 24th at 4 p.m. Mrs. Grappo, tell me a little bit about your family and what do you remember about your parents coming to the East Palestine area?
Well, we come from Italy. I was 4 years old. My mother had two children when she come here, and we landed in the brickyard, we used to call it those days, here, down on the Pennsylvania line. And we had a little company house. Mom took in boarders. She was very discouraged when she saw America. She had the visions of seeing America, beautiful country, nice home and everything. So she ended in a company home, no furniture, nothing. Pop was making, you know, 75 cents a day. So she says, well, we'll just have to have some boarders and help out. And she did. And of course, by the time I didn't start school till I was 7 because I couldn't speak or anything. And I had to help my mother around the house to cook and do things. As little as I was, I had to, because with 7 boarders, you almost had to do it.
Where was your home in East Palestine?
That's where I said it's right. You know where the National Fireproofing, they used to call it.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's where they used to have the company homes. They used to call it the Brickyard when I was a kid. And so we lived there for, I don't remember, a year or two. And then finally, Mom said, if this is America, I think I want to go back to Italy. She said, this is in the woods. I have nothing. So she says, before we have a big family, we better look for a house. So they bought the house up here on East Grant. And it was a 4-room house. At those days, they paid $2,200. So Dad, more boarders, they got in, and they added 2 rooms to the house. And I was about 7 or 8, I was 8 years old, I think, when we moved to town here. So I helped my mother, did a lot of the work. We had oil lamps, coal stove. I had to clean them before I went to school in the morning. And I just grew up there. It was poverty, really. There was no money. We didn't have any rugs on the floor nor nothing. You know, we lived the best way we could. So then I grew up and I went to 6th grade. I got as far as 6th grade in school. Mother had a big family. I'm the oldest of 13.
Where did you attend school in East Palestine?
East North Avenue and, that's the one, East North Avenue, because I only went up to 6th grade.
Did you encounter any difficulties, the fact that you were Italian and there was a language barrier?
Well, it was hard. It was very hard. Like I said, when I was in 1st grade, I couldn't speak. And the teacher would try to tell me, put your name on the paper here, and she would write it on the board. And instead of putting my name, I'd write what the teacher had on the board, because I couldn't understand till she'd come and try to make me understand that I had to put my name down on that paper and the date and arithmetic or spelling, whatever it might have been. So I eventually learned and picked up the language pretty good, and then we tried to teach Mom. As the kids grew up and went to school, we tried to teach Mom to speak a little more. Of course, my father could speak because he had been here before. So we lived there, and I was 15 then. My mother says, get married. I said, I didn't want to get married. I didn't know nothing about getting married at that time, because she took me out of school to help her take care of the kids and the boarders and all. And then she thought, Pop wasn't working. She couldn't get me things that I wanted. So you get married, you'll have a place of your own, and you can have things that you can't have. So I had to listen to parents. The parents did things those days. It isn't like now. You just never said anything. She said, in case things would go wrong, you always have a place home. But if you marry somebody on your own, then you're going to have to live with it. So a kid that age gets scared and say, Mother, I'll do it. Well, I got married, and first thing I know, I ended up with a family. My mother-in-law and my father-in-law and 3 children. So they lived with us.
Who did you marry, Mrs. Grappo?
Well, he was my first cousin.
Okay.
Yeah. So my mother, and my aunt used to be they got along so good in the old country, and she insisted I had to marry her son. She liked me so much, she wanted me to marry. I did it. So I ended up with a family. I had in-laws and three sister-in-laws living in with me. Plus, like I said, we borrowed the money to send for him in the old country because...
Had you met your husband, Michael, yet?
Yeah, he was living here.
Okay,
was living in East Palestine, yeah.
Right.
And so the family came here. They had no money, and like Mike sent them all the money to come here. Then my mother and father gave them a room to stay till they would get situated. Well, and they rushed this marriage. He had a daughter, 16. So her and I, we had a boarder. She fell in love with him, so she married this fellow. He was a nice fellow. So we had our double wedding together, and of course she went her way. They rented an apartment. They lived over by the railroad. There was an express building there, and upstairs they had apartments, and she lived there. So I was stuck with the mother and dad and the kids, but I made the best and lived with them. And finally one day I woke up and I said, boy, I said, Mike, I can't see it. I'm married, I can't buy anything, I can't go to the store and have money to spend for nothing. I'm worse off than what I was at home. I said, your father's healthy, let him go work and make a living for his family. We brought him here and I go. Well, he went and he told his dad. When he told his dad, he got all upset. He took off and moved to Alliance. So he didn't want no part of us anymore because I didn't want to live with him. It just got hurt. That's the way they get. So I felt bad, and we lived down on South Street now where, what the heck is his name? Can't think of his name. Anyhow, the house is 165 down on South Street. That's where we got married, and we lived there for a while. So then, after a couple months, their father...
Tell me about your wedding before you go any further there.
Well, we got married and down on 165 South Street. A few friends came in at night. We got married in Youngstown.
Uh-huh.
And next morning, he had to get up, go to work at the coal mine. No money, you have to go to work. Nobody gave you anything. You know, it isn't like today, you get all these gifts and everything. Nobody. The friends come over, maybe they give you a couple dollars or something like that. Kids come out and bail you with the tin cans, you know. You had to give them something. So Mike went to the bank and he got dimes. They threw dimes up and the kids were just thrilled, you know, they picked up dimes and for the wedding. So we lived there then, and of course after his father then went away to Alliance, after a couple of months he was working, he got a job in the steel mill. One day he went to work and he had a stroke, right, because he had a piece of steel in his hands. And he was bad, he was left practically a vegetable, and when we heard about it, because they wouldn't write to us or anything, we heard about it and I went up and I asked him to come back and live with us. And he was mad. He said, no. He said, you didn't want to live with me before. He said, why should I come and live with you now? I said, Dad, when I asked you that I didn't want to stay, you were healthy. You were able to make your own way into the world. You ought to be proud that I'm only a kid. And I came to ask you to come and stay with me. So I think he thought it over. And after he thought it over, he came back and moved in with us, him and his wife, the kids at that time. Two of them got married, and one was married, and after 3 months, she got killed by a train. So they left the two of them, and they lived with us. He lived with us 9 years with that stroke, so bad. Then he had a second one, lived 6 months in bed, and he died. I had two boys at the time. So my mother-in-law lived with me until she passed away. She was 73, at her 30 years.
Let me ask you if we can go back a little bit to your childhood. You said you were always quite busy helping your mother.
Yeah, right.
And you really didn't have that much time for
nothing,
fun.
No fun.
Was there anything that you can remember as a child? What fun you did have? Activities, entertainment? What about with your family? Did you ever have time to some fun or enjoyment?
Well, like I said, our family, when I was at home, mother had these boarders. There was no place to go. The boarders would get a keg of beer on Saturday night, And some would play accordion, one would play a guitar, they'd sing.
Were most of these Italian,
yeah,
these quarters?
Yeah, they were all Italians. A lot of them were from our hometown in Italy.
Uh-huh.
So it was like one big happy family, and we were happy that, you know, you had that much fun because the boarders would enjoy themselves. And
where did most of the boarders work?
Down at the brickyard. Then when we moved to town,
what
a lot of them...
What year was this... all these Italians had come to work in the brickyard?
Well, I don't remember. It was 14 or 15, something like that.
And most of the Italians that had come to town,
yeah,
were either working in the coal mines
or in the brickyard. Right, that's all there was. Well, then when we moved to here on Grant Street, they were working at McGraw's at the rubber mill. Then my father got a job there because McGraw's they were working. So then most of the boarders were working there. One bunch, there was three brothers. And this John Blasco that's in town, he boarded with us for years. He was like part of a family. He was only about 18 then.
The Blascos that live up in that new section behind the high
John
school.
John Blasco, the old John.
Old John.
He boarded with us, and he just thought the world of my parents because they were nice to him. Young kid, you know, he didn't even know how to talk. He didn't know how to read. We taught him how to sign his name when we'd come home from school at night. So we enjoyed...
And he had a successful business?
Yeah, he was a junk man, and he had a little cart, and he had a horse and buggy, and he'd go around, rags, old iron, you know. And bought himself a motorcycle, and that was his fun.
And today, I believe...
He's got plenty of money.
He did pretty well, didn't he?
Yeah, right. He was really something. He was another one. He got married in the old country, and real young. Then he came here and the war broke out and his wife was taken prisoner and he never knew where she was. But he always told mother, I said, people don't give John credit. He's a good fellow. He said to my mother, if my wife is good and I find her and she don't have nobody's child, she said, I'm going to send for her. She's got to come here. Even if somebody, because the Germans were raping them and everything. And he said, she couldn't help herself. If they did anything like that, I can see it. But I don't want nobody else's children. So he sent for her while he was living at our house. He couldn't speak, but he found a way to go to Cleveland and got to the consulate. They found his wife, and she come to town, and they had the biggest party. He invited everybody in town to go there, like an open house. And it was great. It seemed like all Italians that were here, we were just like one big happy family. You got together on Sundays. You went to visit them. This was the only fun we had. I never... could go out and play or anything like that.
Staying together as a group.
That's right. Coming home from school, I had to be home at 4 o'clock because I had to get the supper started. My friends would say, isn't your mother afraid to let you cook? You'd get burned. It was on a coal stove, no gas stove. I said, no, my mother isn't afraid. She taught me how to do it, and I have to do it because my mother don't have time. Before I went to school, I had to wash all the clothes, put them in the boiler. They used to boil all their clothes years ago. And then when I come home from school, because mother had the babies, one every year, then she had the boarders to cook for. So when I come home, I finish them, no washer, all by hand. And after I got married, I didn't have a washer for 15 years. I did by hand. People would say, well, how do you do your sheets? I said, well, you do them. When you haven't got no other alternative, you make the best of what you got.
When you were a child, how about the clothing? Did you make a lot of your clothing, your family?
Well, no, not too much. Mom passed them down, so I usually ended up with something new because I was the oldest. Then you just keep passing them down to the family.
Were there any favorite stores in town that your
mom
used to like to go to?
Oh, yes, there was Klein's Clothing Store, Scareball's, and there was Fastberg's. There would you... And they were nice. They liked Mother a lot because she had a big family, and they always kid her because she'd be a Jew, you know. And she dealt there, and then they had the shoe store where the band store is now, or where the hardware, Justin Hardware, used to be a shoe store. Mother'd buy all the shoes there. Chamberlain Shoe Store, they had all good, great shoes. But whenever they had a sale, she would go there, buy 7, 8 pairs of shoes. They'd sell them for a dollar. She'd come home, this is yours, this is yours, this is yours. You never tried them on. Like my sister said, it's a wonder we all got good feet yet. Mom said, they'll stretch, because I can't afford to pay a big price. I can remember my first pair that he bought, and you had to lace them clear up to here. I had to get up an hour in the morning to lace all them shoes, those ties. And I was proud because I had a brand new nice leather pair of shoes. But boy, oh boy.
How about the some of the grocery stores in town?
Well, the grocery store, they had Jim Rogers had a grocery store where the county court is now. And my dad used to deal there a lot. And we'd go there, and when Dad would pay the bill, they'd fill you a big bag of candy, and they'd give it to you. If my other sister was with me, he'd give her a bag, too. I said, who does anything like that today? You know, I don't know. People were so lovable at the time.
Did you do a lot of canning with your mom? And
oh, yes.
You had a big garden here.
We had a big garden. We used to can, well, most of our vegetables, that's it. Dad always had a big garden, canned our vegetables and our fruit, peaches and pears. And Dad would go out to these farms because he used to trim trees and he used to do landscaping work. And boy, he'd get Charlie Ward's, it was like a coal wagon with two horses, and he'd go out to the farm and the farmer would say, well, you come and get all the plums you want and the peaches, you know. Didn't cost anything. He'd prune their trees for him or something. And come home, and we'd can all that stuff, and this is how we lived. You couldn't buy everything at the store. Mother used to bake 100 pounds of flour at the time, of bread, between the family and the boarders.
What did you think about the way some of the people in East Palestine ate, as opposed to the way the Italian people ate? Did it seem strange, the things they ate?
Well, no, it wasn't too strange. Of course, I said, boy, macaroni, cabbage, garden vegetables, that's about the thing we cook. We hardly had, we had meat only on Sundays. Mother used to love veal, and she'd always go to Rückenbrod's, that's where she dealt all the time. Raised all the family there. And I said, she would just say, come on, you come home from school and get that sauce made, and we're going to have spaghetti. We're tired of spaghetti. You bought it in a 20-pound case. And she'd have 5 or 6 cases. Those days you paid about $1, $1.50 a case. It was 20 pounds. So you had all different kinds, but they were all macaroni and you lived with it. We didn't have eggs. They were a penny apiece. But like I say, when you get 75 cents a day and you got to keep a family, Mother would say, I can't afford it, that's all. So we didn't. We didn't even have milk. We had coffee. And then depression set in, and they were rationing all the food, the flour, and the sugar. We couldn't put sugar in our coffee, and the kids wanted sugar in the coffee. We never bought milk until the kids got old enough to go out the farm. Then it was 10 cents a gallon, and they walked out the farm to go and buy it. So while I was growing up, I never had been.
But you had cheeses, I guess.
Well, some Italian cheese, not too much. Other than that, some Italian cheese. But mainly it was macaroni and cabbage and all kinds of greens that Dad raised in the garden. That's what we lived. And fruit. We got oranges at Christmas time. I says, today they think, well, if you don't have this, you don't have that, you don't have vitamins. I told the doctor one time, I said, hey, I was raised this way. And what's wrong? There's nothing wrong. They tell me, even today, they say, you're the healthiest looking woman. If you didn't have that arthritis. In fact, if it wasn't the surgery they did on me, the doctor says I can't find nothing else wrong. And we didn't have the proper food, but we lived with it, even if it was just macaroni. And none of them were fat. None of our boys and girls were, you know, heavy, even though we had that kind of food.
So we can say that your childhood, and right up to the time you got married, and even after you...
After I was
married.
You
worked pretty hard.
I did.
There wasn't too much time for fun.
I always had to. Then after we got married, we had a big garden because he got sick, and we couldn't, you know, afford to buy things. So I raised, and I'd can 300-400 quarts, made vegetable soup, all kinds of vegetables. And my father-in-law, he couldn't do nothing, but my mother-in-law would help. She loved to work in the garden because old people from the old country do that. And we would have the garden dug or something, or they'd dig a little bit at a time, and we'd raise our own dry beans. One year we had about a bushel of dry beans, and I laughed. I said, how are we going to get these beans out of the hulls? And my father-in-law says, well, I'll show you. He said, get an old sheet, put the sheet on the floor, put all these dry beans, we let them dry on the plant, put them on there, and then got a stick and just kind of hit them around and everything. Picked a windy day, and we just went like this, and all that stuff blew out, and we had a bushel of clean beans.
How about your husband? When you got married, tell me a little bit about some of the jobs he had when you first...
Well, he just... first, he worked in a coal mine for quite a while. He worked in a coal mine. Used to go 4:30 in the morning and get up and get breakfast. We lived on a little three-room house right up the street here. We paid $10 a month, I think it was. And 4:30, he'd go to work, and I'd get up and go to my mother's and help her do the washing and do the work, because she lived right across the street. Well, then he got a job at McGraw's, and he worked there, and worked there for a while.
How much did he get paid at the coal mine?
Not very much. A couple dollars a day, $2-3. We had gas, lights, coal stove when I got married. That's what I say sometimes. I feel like I'm 200 years old because I went through all that. And then came the Depression, and there was nothing. You couldn't buy this, you couldn't buy that. I'd gone through with it with my parents. And then after I got married, I went through the second Depression, and we didn't have nothing. We had to depend and go on welfare when he got sick, and he didn't want to go. He was too proud, and that's what made him get sick. He had every type of ulcer there is to get. And until things got better for him, that he was on his own and didn't have to depend on somebody to give him charity. In those days, nobody gave you anything. Like now, you can go down and get food stamps, you can get welfare, you can get medicine, you can get glasses if you need them. In my days, nobody give you nothing. When he was sick, he was supposed to have a gallon of milk a day and a half a gallon of cream. That was the only diet he had for a long time till that ulcer, because they had his stomach bursted. And I said, nobody would give me anything. I was expecting this George. That's 45 years ago. I couldn't go out. He'd just come home from the hospital. I sent him to Rookenbrod's to get a few things. And he made him come home, a big man. He says, I can't give you nothing. Your wife has overrun her welfare slip for $4. And he said, so I can't give you any food. Well, he came home. He could barely make it home. That was his first trip out, because I was expecting any day. And he was so downhearted, he came home. He said, oh, and I was crying. And my brother came down from Akron, and he said, what's wrong, sis? And I told him, and he said, oh, boy, am I going down there and give him a piece of my mind? He said, I caddied for him all the time at the golf course. My father raised 13 kids and never owed him a dime, and then he would turn him away for that. So he said, I'll go down, and I'm going to give him that $4, I said, because I don't want to ever go in that store again. When he denied me with a sick man, he ought to have been able to give it to me rather than even charge if he had any heart. So Ralph went down, and he gave him the money, and he said, forget it. He said, you ought to be ashamed to treat my brother-in-law like that just out of the hospital. He didn't say nothing. It was young Kenny. So I went back to the relief office, and I told him I don't want my grocery bill there anymore. I said, I want it over at Jenkins. He said, you can't have it over there. So you see, he'd already called there. He knew that I would do that, probably. He said, you can't go anyplace else because you owe Rookenbrod's $4. I said, no, I don't owe him anymore. My brother just came down and paid him, and I can go buy wherever I wish. I don't have to go and buy it there. You were told what to do. So I got my stuff from then on over at Jenkins, and then he was allowed only unsalted crackers in his milk when he finally got able to go back to work a little bit. He was working at the factory.
How long was your husband off from work?
Oh, he was off so much. For 25 years, he was sick all the time. Every year, he'd get ulcers of some kind, and he wasn't.
And you think it was from worrying about...
That's what it was, right.
Not enough money? And
not enough money, and his parents to keep, and no money. We just got married. Like I said, we had that bank loan to pay back. We had to pay so much a month, plus your rent and your expenses. And, of course, it bothered him. He was young, but he just couldn't see that he had to be dependent on somebody. He was healthy, but he developed these ulcers, and for a long time they didn't know what it was. We went to so many doctors. What little bit of money you made, it took to go around hunting this doctor and that doctor till they find everybody told him you got to quit smoking. And he only used to smoke about a pack a day. So he finally did quit smoking, and that there really helped him, and he lived on milk and crackers. He had a little tin box about that big, and he'd put about four or five crackers and his thermos bottle full of milk, and that's what he went to work for a long time, till his stomach healed. So we had it rough. We didn't have nothing. I bought that house off of Blasco then, because I said, John, you got to help us out. I'm tired moving. We had moved so many times, and with little children, and I wasn't able. I had phlebitis a lot. So he sold us that house. Well, then we had the payments to make, and he started to feel a little bit better, so he kept working, and he said, well, we can pay that $20 a month is what we were paying rent. So we did without a lot of things. That's what I said to my son. I said, your wife should be without things like I was. I have things now, but I never had them until the late 15 years. So we paid up that house, and it was a blessing that we got it, because right after we bought it, 3 months later, the war broke out, and hell broke loose, and all the property went sky high. We could have never bought a house then. And we didn't have no money then. My husband says, you're crazy. How are you going to buy a house? We don't have any down payment. And I'd lay awake at nights, and I'd think, and I said to him, Mike, we had an insurance on him, on a Metropolitan insurance. He never wanted insurance. Well, we never could afford it. And I said, Mike, you got to have at least $1,000. If something happens, what'll I do? So finally talked him into a $1,000 policy after we were married. Well, in 20 years, you'd get your $1,000 back. Well, in those 20 years, he was in and out of the hospital, and we had no money, and I borrowed it on it. So I figured it up one day, and we couldn't pay it back. So I said, Mike, I think there's $300 in there. I went to the lawyer and told him. He was like my father. That lawyer was so good. And I said, Mr. Lyons, I've got to do something. I said, do you think I'll lose any money on this insurance? He said, no, because it's almost matured. He said, you'll get $300 out of it. Well, that's how I went to Blasco, and I said, John, nobody would give us a house for $300 down. But John Blasco did, and that's all we paid down and bought that house. Mike said, you're crazy thinking about it. You'll never get a house for that. I said, well, I'm going to get that money back. So I wrote into the company and told him the conditions, and I'll never be able to pay that back. I want the money back now, even if I do lose, but I didn't lose anything on it, you know. And that's how we bought our first house. So we lived in it all those years, and then when we sold it for $1,700.
You know, you talked about some of the experiences as far as the hardships. I know to this day, East Palestine has very few Italian people.
A lot of them are dead now, but there was quite a few here years back during the war.
And most of the people in East Palestine were not Italian. Did you ever feel that because you were Italian, you weren't treated fairly at times? Without naming any people or
No, instances? Kids were cruel. Uh-huh. Kids were really cruel those days. They would call you names and things, you know, because you couldn't talk right or something like that. But other than that, some of the people were nice. But like I say, if you got down in the gutter, you had to get up on your own, because nobody helped each other. I can remember one year at Christmas, like I said, seven of us in the house, nothing for the kids, nothing in the house, no money. He had just got out of the hospital that night before Christmas. He always would get it every year at the same time. It always seemed around November, December. And this was a new doctor, and he was really something. He knew the condition. There was no trains or buses to go to the hospital. This doctor would come and pick me up every morning, take me to the hospital, because they never thought he'd live.
What hospital were you?
Salem Hospital.
Salem.
Yeah, and they had to give him blood transfusions and all that. And he took them, and he didn't know where he was going to make it. Then when he finally did make it and come home the day before Christmas, this doctor went down to Rückenbrod's. He sent about a $30 order for Christmas, all the stuff Mike was supposed to eat, because he knew. And I said, we couldn't pay him. And he moved out of town because he said he's Palestine, nobody would pay him. He went up to Struthers. And after about a year or so, we got on our feet. And we went up one day, and I said, we want to pay you, doctor. He couldn't remember us, because he was a young doctor. He just got married in town when he moved here. And he couldn't remember. And I said, don't you remember the fast ride you used to give me to the hospital every morning, Mrs. Grappo? Mike had bleeding ulcers and that. Oh, God. He said, you are the first person from East Palestine to come up here and want to pay me. And you are the only person. I can't tell you what you owe me. Because, he said, I knew he was a very good Catholic. He said, I knew you were good, but you didn't have it. And I didn't expect your husband was ever going to make it and live. So I have not put down in my books nothing about you. And I don't know what to charge you. I said, I know, doctor, but just to come and pick me up every morning and everything. We're sorry that we had to wait this long, but he just got on his feet. And he said, he's the only man that I've had with that trouble that has lived. The rest of them are all in the cemetery. He said, he really did what I told him to do. And he's living today, and I'm happy for you. He said, if it makes you happy, just give me $50 just to make you feel happy that you paid me. And that's all he charged. So, you see, some people did good, but was very few. Then some of our friends here, this Ferris, he's dead now, but the kids are still alive. They're such nice people. He took up a collection one Christmas, and he came up and he said to me, Mike just got out of the hospital, and I know it's Christmas. You don't have no money. He said, I gathered up $50. I don't want you to feel offended by taking it. You know, it's charity. But I thought you could use it. So we accepted it graciously. I mean, you know, it made you feel good that they thought of you. But still, you had pride that you wished you didn't have to do that. But they were nice. We had some nice Italian people in town.
How about your children were raised in the Depression?
Depression, right. This George was a Depression baby. He had a nickel palsy when he was born.
How did you make ends meet during the Depression? You had how many children during the 1930s?
Four children. And one died.
Uh-huh. Well, so, how did you make ends meet? In the 30s, what did your husband, he was still sick?
Yeah, he was sick. If he worked 2 or 3 months and then he was back in the
hospital. Where was he working in the 30s now?
Well, he worked in Columbiana. He worked in Beaver Falls at B&W during the war and that, you know. He'd change jobs when they were laid off and he'd get something somewhere else. But I had the children, and like I said, we lived up on West Martin. And I had a very good neighbor that didn't know what depression was. Her husband was a ceramic engineer at the pottery, made a lot of money, lived next door to him. Oh, they had all kinds of good food. She used to come in, you know, and she'd say, oh, Lena, what are you cooking today? She says, when I moved there, I got it around her that she said, I don't want no dirty Italians moving next door to me, because they had money. And I found that out later. And I said, oh, how come you didn't want any dirty Italians? Well, she said, I didn't know you were going to be that kind. All Italians I knew were like that. I said, well, I didn't think you should have made that kind of statement. Then we were best of friends. She used to come over because I baked and cooked and everything. He used to make keys, 3 for $1, 4 for $1, whatever it was. He had a little key machine in our living room. That was a little bit of money he made when he was sick. So I'd go down the A&P. We had an A&P. You got bacon, 10 cents a pound. Maybe you get a couple of pounds of bacon or something. Then we couldn't buy meat because we didn't have the money. They had the skin you take off of the pork, and they would sell that 10 cents a pound. I'd buy a couple pounds of that. I'd go home, stew it, and I'd make a sauce out of it. She'd come in and she'd say, what are you cooking? It smells so good. And she was nosy. She was really nosy. She was a nice person, but nosy. She'd go at the stove and look, and she said, what's that? I said, it's pigskin. I'm making spaghetti sauce. She said, you mean you're going to eat that stuff? She said, why, they make shoes out of it. And I said, well, we're not lucky, you know. We have to eat what we can. I would make homemade macaroni, and we'd have a nice meal.
And it didn't cost you much either.
No, 20 cents. 20 cents. And I said, now they sell it. I was in New York, and they roll it. And people say they stuff it and cook it, that pork, fresh pork skin. I said, well, God, we had to do that. I had to learn how to sew. My first daughter was born 15 years after we were married. I had all boys. My mother says, you'll never have a girl. Well, she died about nine and a half months later. I had the first daughter. And I was so happy, and I couldn't afford to buy her clothes. I had to learn how to sew. So I started making her clothes, and she looked as pretty as anybody else. 2 years later, I had another girl. That was my last then. She was a baby. And I had to sew. I had to do my sewing. I used to make my bras. I used to make my underwear, underclothes.
When your kids were being raised in the Depression, how about the kids themselves? Did they ever complain about not having much?
Never.
What was their situation?
They never complained. They knew we didn't have it. They accepted it. They never hounded me for anything. We never gave the children allowance because I didn't have it. And when they got old enough, like I said, I used to grow vegetables, and I'd clean them and put them in a little basket, and Jim would go out and sell them. And that was his spending money, because we didn't have it. The kids didn't complain, didn't have new clothes. Holiday come along, no gifts, because like I said, he was always sick at Christmas time every year. So one year he made him a car. He had the time, and he made him a little car, and that was, oh, they were tickled to death over it. They used to have, the American Legion would gather old toys, and then Christmas they'd bring them out to people who were on welfare or something. And I can remember that's all our kid had was a little old car, about that big. It was heavy. And I went into 5 to 10, got a can of paint, 10 cents when the kids didn't see it, and painted it all up. That was the Christmas present. And they never complained. My children never complained.
Not your children, your grandchildren.
Yeah, that's... Everybody today has a lot of gifts.
Well,
How about East Palestine in general? During the Depression, how would you describe life in East Palestine? Did it change or things?
Well, I think life was much better in those days because there was a lot more people. You'd go down the street. You know, we had the rubber works. There was a lot of people employed in the coal mines and the rubber work and the brickyard. And there was a lot going on in town. But today the town looks vacated compared to what it was when I was about 14 years old.
Did you feel that the Depression hurt most of the people in East Palestine, or were there a lot of people who really weren't affected that much by the Depression?
Well, most of them were. There were some people, like I say, at the pottery, if they had a good job, they were all right. But the Depression hit most of the people. But they used to grow all their own vegetables, and they used to make do, you know, help themselves the best they could.
As a family, what did your family do for enjoyment or entertainment?
They did. They just visit one another and have a little get-together, maybe cook a meal or dinner or something like that. But you didn't have... Once in a while, my dad would get the family, take them to the fair. They used to have a fair at the fair where our park is. They had the fairgrounds. And there'd be a circus or a fair or something like that. And it would be a treat. He'd say, well, come on, let's take the kids to the fair. The show used to be 10 cents. We'd say, Mom, can't we go to the grand show that used to be down on Rebecca Street there, right next to the Legion? She says, I can't afford 10 cents a piece for each one, so you didn't get to go.
Wow.
No, they had ice cream parlors everywhere. My sister used to work in one of them. Well, how are you going to go? You didn't have the money, so you didn't go.
Well,
so you made it. You made it through the Depression, and things start to get better with World War II.
Yeah, after World War II.
What do you, when war hit, do you remember anything unusual about East Palestine, or maybe you could tell me a little bit about rationing or food stamps?
Well, there
and
was.
Things like that.
They rationed. They rationed all your food, your gas. You had to ticket, you went down there and you only got so much, and if you was on welfare, that was twice a week, they would have a place where they put whatever surplus food, whether it was butter, grapefruit, or whole wheat flour, and you got something like that. But everything, the sugar was rationed a lot, we didn't have sugar. So you just kind of lived with it because there was no other alternative.
So,
and people didn't kick.
Did it Did it create any hardships for your family?
Well, it did. It was hard. It was hard because kids didn't like what, you know, what you had to give them. I can remember many a times when I was at home, my mother would say, what are we going to have for supper? I don't know what we're going to have. We don't have nothing. Dad isn't working. And she'd say, well, the birds don't starve. God doesn't let the birds starve, so he ain't going to let us starve. He'd say, the kids go out and go get a gallon of milk, and I'll bake. All she could bake was a big chocolate cake when I was home. My aunt had taught her how to do it. You put everything in the pan and mix it up, put it in the oven. Boy, the kids were so happy to have that big chocolate cake. That was their supper, that and a glass of milk.
How about you had a car in the 1940s?
Well, we had an old car.
We always had an old
car. Yeah, we had an old Chevy. But my father never drove. We never had a car. Walked miles to the coal mine. And so did he. He walked for many years to the coal mine. Didn't have a car.
Rationing of gasoline create any problems for your husband to go back and forth?
No,
to work?
Because we didn't go. We didn't go no place. You just go to work and that's it. I used to walk to town with a market basket. Carry your grocery home, that's all.
I was at the water plant and I was allowed to cease them because I was connected with the water.
Yeah, he was working down Beaver Falls and he had,
and I had enough to do.
He had enough to do him and he used to give them to people who needed them once in a while. It wasn't easy, but I think people just more so accepted it better than we do now.
Did you have any relatives that went off to war?
Oh, I had six in our family, brothers and...
Any of your children, seven. Did they,
no,
they missed
it? No, they missed it, yeah. My son, Jim, he enlisted after the war was over. He was in the Marines for 2 years, but the kids missed it. But my brothers were all in. One boy was in Iwo Jima when they raised the flag. He was made a career of the Marines. He's the one in Orlando, Florida that I go to visit.
Yeah, poor brother.
My brother was a lieutenant in the Navy. He was a college graduate. He worked his way through college. Have nothing. So my other brother was in Germany, the Battle of the Bulge, when they all write home to me because mother was dead and I was the more or less they thought of me as, you know, somebody they could rely.
So during the 1940s, things aren't still so wonderful for the Grappos as far as money goes.
No, as far as money, it wasn't good. Still.
And then your husband, it was about 1946, he decided to...
Start that shop.
But
I used to wash, iron, bake, do things for people. Even we had an Isley store, he'd come up and he'd say, Lena, make me spaghetti sauce, because I want good spaghetti sauce and meatballs, and then he would serve it down there. All they'd do is boil the water and cook the spaghetti. I'd do anything to make a few dollars to buy some things for our kids because there was no money to be gotten nowhere. But today, how many people do that? I said, I often wonder how much flour I've used in my 56 years.
And as the kids got older, did any of your children want to go to college?
They wanted to go, yes. They both, see, George, or Jim did go 2 years at Kent State, or 1 year, wasn't it?
1 year.
1 year. And we couldn't afford it, and he couldn't get a job, so he had to quit. But George, he wanted to go so bad, because he was good in metal art in school, you know. I guess he's a chip off the old block. He loves metal work. So when he graduated, he said, Mother, you have to tell me something. I'd love to go to college and be an engineer. I said, honey, how am I going to send you to college? I said, we paid $1,800 for the house. I can't go and borrow money to send you to college. And what'll I do? Your father's sick and I won't have a place to live. He said, well, that's all I wanted, just so I know you would send me if you could. So he went out and got a job as a draftsman. And he kept working himself up till today. Well, he does all kinds of blueprints.
He's a chief engineer. Bennox is the only one in the whole place. And atomic energy. Boy, that's
the he's guy. Good. He's really top in his field.
Yeah.
Learned it all the hard way.
When you think about some of the things that took place in your years in East Palestine, What do you think during your lifetime in East Palestine was the greatest invention or innovation that you can think of? Something that you thought was a remarkable thing and really brought some changes?
Well, the changes came when they started to make good roads. When I was little, all they had was dirt roads. East Main Street, West Main Street was nothing but dirt, horse and buggies running around. And boy, when they started to put new roads and we could have walks and stuff like that, well, to me, I thought that was great, you know. But the stores, it's never gotten any bigger. The main street, Market Street, is still the same as it was when I was little, only now it's got a nice brick, or it used to be brick, the road, then they paved it.
So when 1946 and your husband's got the his own shop, and do you start to feel that the Grappos can relax a little, or are they?
No. So even after he got into business, we had no money. We had to borrow the money to buy his machinery to get started in business. And by the time we paid off of that machine, you still were worse off, because where was the money coming? You had to make payments on this money. Until he got, well, it was 2 or 3 years or so, or four, before it got really better. So after he paid his machine off, he felt, well, now I've got my building made. Now what I make, we can spend it a little bit. But like I say, 15 years, I didn't own a washing machine. Washed everything by hand. On a wooden board. He made a wooden board, washboard. As those washboards you bought, they didn't last too long.
That would change from that.
Yeah. So now the 16 years we're here, this has been... The last 16 years has been really...
You live in 11 houses.
A lot nicer.
How about the...
We moved 11 times.
The 1950s, things are still getting better, and your husband's got plenty of customers.
Oh, yes.
And how about as a family? Did you start to do a little more as a family?
No, we didn't. Still didn't go nowhere. We still didn't go anywhere.
I got the house. It was a new house and stuff.
Yeah, he had to make payments. He started to save money because I was in the hospital quite a bit then. I had leg surgery, phlebitis, you know, and I was in bed most of the time. So I had to go to the hospital, and we didn't have money. We didn't have insurance, so we had to pay that.
Weddings.
So that was hard. Then the kids got married, and we always had nice weddings for them. That took money. So another way, you couldn't splurge, because what little bit you had to make do with these things that come up unexpectedly.
Where did you live when your husband first had his shop?
Up the street here, there's a brick house. There's two brick houses together. We lived in the middle one.
Uh-huh.
315 East Grant.
We lived in 10 houses
before. We did. I did. We moved enough homes.
Well,
but it started to get better, and after we moved here, then I had two surgery after we moved here.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you, some of the other Italian people that had moved to East Palestine, did you see a lot of families starting to move away from East Palestine?
No, the ones that came here stayed here.
They stayed here.
And
who were some of the Italian families that have been here for quite a long time in East Palestine?
Well, the Chicks and the Rosses and the
Orsines
and Too Much and Mr. Colella and Grillo. And who was the other?
Ferris's, Ross's.
Oh, there was a few more.
Blasco?
Well, Blasco's not Italian. But most of the Italian people, they came here, they stayed here. Panucci, he was a shoemaker, very good friend of ours, and he stayed here quite a while, then he moved to California. He's the only one that I can remember ever moved. Yeah, and Joe that lived down... The one who used to come and play the serenade on Christmas.
Joe Oates.
Yeah, the Oates family. Yeah, and the Bazzo families. They all came and they stayed here. And we were all friends with all of them.
Ungaro.
Yeah, Ungaros, yeah.
Argamini.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, all of them. And we were friends with all of them. So on Sunday, this is what you did if you wanted to go visit them. And they come to visit us, and they had the Italian people. I don't know if you remember, they did that over there.
Whenever they you have a baby, they all come to see you. Oh, well, the people couldn't get over it, the neighbors. The American friends, they used to say, Jesus, your people, your house is just like a church door. You've always got people coming in, coming all the time with baskets. And I said, every time I was sick or had a baby or something, they would bring food over and come and visit you. We'd go and visit them. This was the pleasure you got out of life. You made friends, where today people don't associate much like that. And when you had a friend, now we have Manos, used to have a barbershop here, you know them, Frank and them. Well, I've known them since they come to town. We've been good friends, never once had any disputes or any problems, just great friends.
The one thing you can say about your life in East Palestine, there were a lot of good friends.
All of them.
The people, the Italian people, seem to be closer when they came to America than they were, even in Italy?
No, I think they were close, very close here. Once you made a friend, and you were honest, you know, and you weren't the type that would talk behind their back or say something, you had a friend for life, and they would do anything in the world. Then we had aunts and uncle and alliance. We used to go up there and visit the relatives, cousins, you know. So it was really, that was our pleasure we had in life. We didn't go any place, picnics or anything like that, but we got along with all the people, and you visit. You spend Sundays.
So you stayed on East Grand Street until 1963, when you moved to this present house. You had been married quite a few years before you actually got your first new house.
Right, the first house.
We lived in 11 houses.
Before we bought that one from Blasco, and like I said, that was so bad, it was during the war. Just before the war broke out, we bought it.
So since 1963, you've lived here, and your husband has continued to work.
And he's had better health, and I've had rotten health.
Wow.
He's had good health since we've, well, he was sure of himself. He was happy with his work, and... he knew that he didn't have to depend on anybody to give him a dime, and that there just seemed to boost his morale or done something that he got better, and he never had any more reoccurrence of his ulcers.
Maybe for a minute we could talk about the churches of East Palestine. What you remember about the first Catholic church here in town, and maybe you could say something about how the other religions, how everybody treated each other. Do you feel that all the religions treated one another equally? Or
not like today.
Not like
no,
today.
No. Today it's wonderful because they're all, you know, you think a lot of each other. Those days, the Catholics weren't allowed to go in the Protestants. And Protestants stayed to themselves, and it wasn't a unity like it is now.
What was the...
So we went to our little old church. That was really an old building we had there for a long time.
Where was this
Where
located?
The telephone on West Clark,
West
where
Clark.
That telephone building is there. That's where our old church
that
used
was
to
the
be.
First Catholic church in
right.
the
Right, that was the first one, St. Mary's. And we used to live right across the street from it. There was a house there. So we lived there for quite a while, and Father Hyde was...
1941, the building.
Yeah. So then in 1941, they built this one up here.
Right, to go to the school.
So the churches, they weren't like today at all. People didn't, I don't know.
Quite a bit of closeness with the people that did attend the church.
Yeah, the ones that did attend it, yes. Like I said, I could go to church and see, I used to walk a lot then. And somebody'd see you, come on, I'll take you home. There wasn't too many people that had the car, but the one that did, they would take and bring you home. I said, today you go to church, and if you walk, you just better walk, because nobody gives a darn.
It's different today?
It is different, because today there's a lot of the younger people, and the younger people, they don't associate. They don't think the same as the old people. Those days, there were people maybe our age or something. And they would say, well, you stand in front of church and you'd be talking with this one and that one and the other. Now, boom, 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 they're run.
Straight.
You don't see anybody anymore. Now, there's a few of our people still living here that maybe we'll get to talk or see how are you or something like that. But the younger people don't seem to mingle. Now, they tried in our church to have, my son was at the head of it, and he said, we got to get the new people together so that we can mingle together as a body, you know, we're all the same here. They had, and they served lunch and everything. Yeah, there was a handful of people. He said, what do you have to do to get these people to get together, you know? Like we used to years ago, we used to get together. But I don't think the younger people want to do that today.
Something that I wanted to ask you earlier that I didn't was about your mother and father. I thought maybe you could tell me what part of Italy they'd come from, about when they came to America and why your mom and dad came.
Well, Pop came, oh God, I don't know what year he came. He was here long before my mother. And he always worked in the brickyards too. And then he finally decided he made enough trips and he was going to send for my mother. So she came, must have been 1910.
He was born 1907, so.
I was 4 years old. 1911 then it might have been.
Yeah.
About 11 or 12 when my mother came here.
And he came for work.
But he was here because he came for work. There wasn't much there and he thought he could better himself. So he lived in Waynesburg for a long time. And then, like Georgia, my son used to say, of all the places on this earth in America, why did they have to pick East Palestine? They never liked it because there was nothing doing here, you know. They said, what do you do in this town? Well, our kids, they had an empty lot across from where we lived. And they'd get all the boys together and the girls, and they would play ball. Oh, they had a ball. That was their pastime. They're fun. They never had any problem. Like one day the lady, I met her in a beauty shop a few years back. She said, we're going to try to vote and have a roof put over the park there, the swimming pool. I said, listen, I don't know what we need that to raise our taxes for. We don't need no roof. She said, well, you don't have children. She said, I have my children. They're all under my feet. I said, listen. My mother had 13, and they weren't under her feet because they had work to do. They all had something to do. They were told to do it, and they done it. And I said the only place they had was a ball field, and they were happy. As soon as they ate their supper, got the dishes done, they were out there playing ball, and they had the time of their life. They used to belong to the Boy Scouts, and they would go to different houses and do their whatever, you know, they had to do. Yeah. Then the Saldos used to live, I don't know if you know Ben Saldo and all them. Well, they used to live a cat a corner from us. Every year on St. Anthony Day, he would always make this big fire. He'd gather all this wood, because St. Anthony's supposed to be patron saint to the fire. So we'd all gather together and sing all the Italian songs and church songs and things like that, sit around till that fire would die down at night, and then my mother would go get a pot of beans put on there, and the next morning she'd go get them, and they were cooked because there was a heavy fire there. And it was a lot of fun. The kids used to join in, you know, and they'd all carry the wood there all year long, make the fire for St. Anthony. They found pleasure in a lot of things that we've done.
Yeah, it was a lie. Well, they took time off to believe in something, which you should do.
Do you remember anything about coming over yourself? Is there anything that you can...
No, I just remember that when my father met us at the station, we got here in East Palestine, my mother had a couple of pillows that she had stuff in, and she was carrying my sister, this is the one living in Florida, she was... about 2.5 years old or something like that. So Mom was carrying her, and Pop says, Louise, in America, the man has to carry the children, not the woman. You can't carry it. I'm going to carry it. Well, Claire had never seen a man in her life because she was at home with Mom all the time. The minute my father wanted to grab her, she screamed. She didn't want no part of it. She grabbed Mom around the neck, and Pop tried to get her off. And oh, that was a bad start. Because he said, here, she doesn't like me. Well, Mom said she never saw a man. I was different. Of course, I've been different all the time. And that's all I can remember, all the way we walked from the station to the brickyard, clear down there in the end of, on the Pennsylvania line. And all that way, my father carried Claire, and she cried and screamed all the way home. We had to climb fences. There was Taggart's farm there. You had to climb those fences. I said, I went to school, Wood Street. My first grade, I went to Wood Street. And I used to walk from there to Wood Street, walk home. And then when I got home, of course, after a year, my mother was here. She had a little girl. She didn't have enough nurse, so I had to go down on where Clyde Davis used to live, back there. What's the name of that street now?
Garfield.
Where Mary Bruner lived. Yeah, they had a barn back there, and they had a cow. And I had to walk back to town, 7 years old, with my little milk can, and go get milk for my sister Rose.
They
used to have bums all along the way. They'd built a teepee fire, like a teepee, you know, and they'd have a can, a coffee can or something, cook things. And I got so scared one night. I was just so frightened. There was a man walking in front of me, and I thought maybe these, but they never hurt anybody, but I was scared. I was a little kid. I was scared. So I start running. I kept saying, Pop, Pop, wait on me, Pop, wait. That's all I could say because I was afraid these bums would come after me. But every night I had that ritual to go back from school and then back, because they didn't milk the cow till late, and I'd carry the milk home, the little bucket of milk.
Let me ask you, looking back over the years in East Palestine, are there any changes you would have liked to have seen taking place in East Palestine? Just some, if there was anything that you think would have maybe made the town a better place.
Have thought if they'd have had a few more stores in East Palestine, would have made a better place, would induce people to stay around here and shop more. But we had such a small clique here that they prevented other big stores from coming in or anything like that. So that was the only thing I didn't like. I said, why can't we have like a JCPenney or a Ward's or some big store where these little stores that you patronized, you know, they gouged you because they thought, well, you can't go nowhere. But then after the cars commenced to, then people all would go out and shop. And that's when they started to hurt. Well, then, of course, we got this big five and dime. And when they got that, they started to handle everything. And some of the people, you know, stayed around and bought stuff here. But I would have liked to see East Palestine had a good clothing store or a good cloth, sell just nothing but cloth. I know my daughter tried, she used to love to sew. She thought a couple of times she'd like to open a store just to sell. Well, then when she decided, the woman up here at the streets, she opened up that cloth store. So you can't have too many of them. But other than that, like they say, they don't want Palestine to grow. They want to keep it small. They say it's nicer when the town is smaller.
Well, I want to thank you, Mrs. Grappa, for letting me talk to you today.
Well, it was a real pleasure. Thank you for coming.